From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 21st day of December 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. It's the winter solstice. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Your Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media, David Dickey, will be here with a look at today's agricultural news. We'll discuss the cash grain markets with Bruce Bostard at the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, and wrap it all up by having a quick discussion about the weather forecast with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey. And, Gary Schnitke will be here, Extension Farm Management Specialist, to talk about Illinois farm incomes for last year and next year. And it all happens during this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Here's what the numbers from the CME Group settled like on this Friday afternoon. March wheat futures were a penny and a half higher for the day at $7.92. The May at 8.02 unchanged. July up a penny at 8.08 and three quarters. In December of next year, in the wheat pit at 8.32 and three quarters on its settlement, up two and a quarter. The heart red down three and a half at 8.56 and a half in Kansas City. Back in Chicago, the corn pit now. March futures, 7.02, a settlement price up five and a half. The May at 7.04 and three quarters up a nickel. July 7.02, four and three quarters higher. Next year's December, $6.06¾, up 3 cents for the day. January soybeans gained 25 and a quarter to finish at $14.34 after a pretty rough week. March futures at $14.31, up 26 and a quarter. And May contract at $14.17½, up 22 and three quarters. July beans, $14.11 and three quarters, up 21 and a quarter in November. Settlement price now, $13.50, finished 12 and three quarters of a cent higher. Bean meal futures at $4.33.80, up 6.10. Bean oil at $48.71, 80 cents higher. Live cattle futures finished up with the February 7.5 cents higher at $133.57½. The March contract in the feeders at $154.77½, down 7.5 cents. And lean hogs finished the April at $91.62½. They were up 45 cents for the afternoon. It is the 21st day of December. It's the winter solstice. On the phone line with us to take a look at how the agricultural futures markets fared as we head into winter is Mike Zuzulo. He's at He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hello, Todd, and welcome to the Mayan holiday.
You know what? It must be the Mayan holiday because I started the program out and the computer that keeps track of all of the prices decided it was not going to work. So I had to reboot in the process and, well, it all happens at the same time.
But that's what I blame the soybeans on this week. If you want some fine-tuned analysis, it's the Mayan holiday is what it is.
Is that what we're going to blame it on? Hey, you know what? It was a really ugly week for soybeans. What do you think about the future of that particular commodity?
I think that the future is good if the market would go back to supply-demand fundamentals. I think that the trade by today's close came to a conclusion, at least based upon the contacts I spoke with, and I was on the phone all week with people, different groups of people, trying to get a bead on where they were at. And I think the trade is coming to the conclusion that these cancellations by China are most likely done as a result of them buying too high a price beans and wanting to come in and buy lower price beans and get their crush margins back up. And indeed, one of my colleagues at Bloomberg sent me a crush margin chart. And they are back to, they're still negative, but not by much, and they're back to levels that we haven't seen since September, early October time period. So they are back to levels that are very, very good compared to what they came off of at the end of November. And I think that's where I sit with the beans is today was another great example of it, Todd, where the USDA came out and said soybean sales of 110,000 metric tons were sold to unknown destinations, but they were domestic, not foreign destinations. I and several other people in Chicago, I've never heard of an unknown domestic sale set out by USDA. This is a first for me. So I think that the confusion in the market and the fact that China did this 2 weeks in a row sent the market on this lower move, and wheat and corn certainly weren't going to support because of the fiscal cliff issues. But if you take a step back and look at the supply-demand, our year-to-date commitments are 46% ahead ahead of last year at this time.
Can I whisper in your ear a rumor I heard about the 500,000 tons?
I may not tell you if I think it's true or not, but yeah.
I heard that was just a trade. That was never on the books to be shipped, that it was just a trade.
And I think this is where these rumors are probably closer to reality, or the trade thinks the perception is that they're closer to reality. And as you get into this holiday trade with thinning volume, you're going to have these things hit the market a lot harder. So chart-wise, beans don't look good. Spread-wise, beans don't look good. We broke below the January-July bean spread below 20 cents on a weekly close. That was a number I really did not want to see. But if you take a step back and look at the fundamentals of supply-demand going into the January report, we still are not rationing enough.
So come back to where we started. You're feeling as if soybeans have a little more upside yet in them then.
If the wheat can bottom. Yeah, I think this is where it goes back to last week's commodity week.
Okay.
We went back to those gaps, you know, that you talked about at the end of the commodity week. I think it was the ending part or the beginning part of commodity week last week. Will we go back to those gaps? And I was the view, no, I don't think we need to, given the fundamentals, unless wheat can't turn around. I'm still in that mindset.
All right. So tell me about the wheat market fundamentals that make you in that format.
Well, the biggest thing with the wheat is that what we saw, and I think this really adds a lot of weight to the idea of the fiscal cliff really pulling and tugging on this market psychologically and continuing to keep funds in a liquidation process, was that Tuesday we had a very likely deal done. That's what the media was reporting on fiscal cliff. Wheat turned around. Wednesday morning, we got the Egyptian purchases of U.S. wheat. We are now the most competitive of the major suppliers based upon a commentary today from TEPFER International. So we take out the weekly highs early on Wednesday. The fiscal cliff deal unwinds, and all of a sudden we go right back in the dump for the wheat, and all of a sudden we're looking at 5-6 month lows again for the wheat and for the corn. Fundamentally, the European markets closed up over 2% today as a weekly close here in the midday market, but our market could not get off of the fiscal cliff mindset. So between the Egyptian purchases and the fact that the government of Argentina is stopping wheat exports because they're worried about the crop, and the Bahia Blanca exchange is down to an 8 million ton Argentine wheat production forecast, fundamentals continue to improve in wheat, in my view.
Do we need to lose another 50 cents in corn in order to keep producers from planting 100 million acres?
I don't think so. I think that the market has not looked at any of the friendly fundamentals of what's going on in Argentina with corn and what's going on with Brazil in corn. I think that the trade, like about mid-November, when you and I were talking about almost the same thing, when we were higher in price, I think, or right about where we are in price, the trade has once again kind of thrown away the idea of supplies falling faster than demand. They're on the track again that demand's falling faster than supplies.
Anything else we ought to add before I let you go? Maybe
cattle on feed, maybe
yep,
a little negative. Placement's 94. That was above estimates, and marketing's not as good as we should have seen as well.
All right. Thanks so much.
Merry Christmas, sir.
You too. That is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. Joins us on this Friday afternoon, as usual, to take a look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural futures. You can always hear Mike again, of course, if you'd like, on our website at willag.org.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
In just a few moments, your Director of Ag Programming, David Dickey, will be here to take a look at today's agricultural news. This, of course, is the closing mark report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
In agricultural news, USDA yesterday announced a new mandatory livestock monitoring system 7 years after the U.S. found 3 cases of mad cow disease that virtually shut down U.S. beef exports. The new program, while mandatory, does give states flexibility in how animals are tagged and records kept. It also only requires tracking of animals shipped over state lines. In such cases, the animals must be officially identified and accompanied by an interstate certificate of veterinary inspection or other documentation, such as owner-shipper statements or brand certificates. The final rule does exempt beef cattle under 18 months of age from the identification requirements unless they are moved interstate for shows, exhibitions, rodeos, or recreational events. The final rule will be posted in the Federal Register on December the 28th. Iowa's Department of Natural Resources and EPA have drafted a work plan agreement to improve the state's regulation of concentrated animal feeding operations. This past summer, EPA Region 7 released a scathing report that cited a number of shortfalls in the way Iowa regulates CAFOs. State and agriculture officials have pointed to a lack of adequate funding as a roadblock to implementing more widespread inspection of CAFOs and in establishing more conservation measures. New Iowa regulations would require that manure, litter, and processed wastewater not be applied closer than 100 feet to any down gradient surface waters, open tile line intake structures, sinkholes, agricultural wellheads, or other conduits to surface water. The Commerce Department today says that U.S. consumer spending rebounded last month. Personal consumption expenditures, which measures purchases ranging from cars and clothes to health care and travel, increased by 0.4% in November. Consumer spending accounts for 2/3 of demand in the U.S. economy. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Over the past couple of days, I've talked to you a little bit about a January 25th event we're calling Voices of Illinois Agriculture. It's a fundraiser for the Agricultural Communications Program and the Hospitality Management Program at the College of ACES. Gary Schnitke is one of the folks that will be there, and he joins us now to talk about all the projected incomes from last year and what might be coming up in next year for you and your farm.
2012 crop farm incomes look to be above average, and part of the reason even they're going to be above average, even though we're going to have lower yields over much of the state, is because we had higher prices, obviously, and because of crop insurance payments. About 60% of the acres are insured in the state, and those farms that took crop insurance will have those crop insurance payments make up a large part of the yield loss that they have suffered.
Can you tell me about the differences between the farms that did and did not have crop insurance and then the differences between those that had crop insurance and maybe those who had the harvest price option?
Yeah. We made some projections for a 1,200-acre farm, and that farm with crop insurance, RP at an 80% level, would have, we're projecting, incomes just slightly over $200,000. If they did not take crop insurance, those incomes would be at $19,000, and that's assuming a 100-bushel yield and a 30-bushel soybean yield. And obviously, that income would depend on those yields. But you'd see a sizable decline in incomes on that farm. And that's RP with the harvest price option, so slightly over $200,000 to just about $19,000. If they had only without the harvest revenue option, we would be looking at an income somewhere in the $120,000 to $130,000 range.
Did you make also income projections for the 2013 growing season?
Yeah, we made projections for the 2013 growing season. We projected incomes using trend line yields and a pretty high corn price of $5.80 and $12.80 for soybeans, roughly what we can get pre-harvest hedging right now. those incomes would be somewhat something close or something over $250,000. So we're looking at a pretty good projected income for 2013. Obviously, that depends on normal yields and reasonably high prices given where we're starting at this year price-wise.
Are there farms in the state of Illinois that are at more risk than others in 2013 as it pertains to total income?
The farms that would have the roughest time dealing with it are those that have a large portion of their acres cash rented at pretty high cash rent levels. Because once those prices fall, incomes aren't there to support those cash rent levels. So if we see a period where we see lower prices, high cash rent farms with high cash rent levels.
Gary Schnittke, Farm Management Specialist at the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us to take a look at what's been happening in the world of cash grain markets is Bruce Bostard. He's at the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company in Ludlow, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Bruce. How are you?
Good. It's amazing. When you crash and burn the flat prices, you don't have a whole lot of activity in the cash grain market. Things get pretty quiet.
Well, it's the end of the year, so you're quiet there. Nobody's interested in making sales of new or old crop, corn or soybeans?
Oh, we see some small year-end evening up type sales. The phones are actually relatively busy on tax and accounting type questions. Is it moving a whole lot of grain? No. But there's a lot of activity just on that.
So the question is just, should I make the sale now and try to avoid the tax later, or what's the question you're asking?
Oh, yeah, or moving a January sale to December, moving payments around and kind of fine-tuning the year-end for taxes.
I bet it's difficult for you to move a payment around that fast. Is that right or not?
Oh, it actually, with as flat a market as it is, it makes life pretty easy. When you end up with a huge carry market and you're trying to move stuff back to the nearby when it's worth a lot less, that's when it gets a little more challenging.
You see bases heating up anytime soon?
No. It's done really well, though, just the fact that we have broken corn and beans back so far. We saw that big chunk of Chinese cancellations, and the basis has hung in there. And we have that, and the first Brazilian beans probably coming off in about 30, 40 days. The fact that it hang in there is kind of encouraging. It looks like there's just enough question out there on what their shipping capacity is to keep interest here. Corn, same old story. Nobody wants our corn.
Your bids for the day.
We are at 7.11 on nearby corn and 14.39 on soybean.
Hey, I got to ask you one more question. Why don't they want our corn? Is it just aflatoxin?
No. When you're looking at what we are selling it for, the U.S. Center Gulf offers or any of our ports offers are so much over what they can buy at other places.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's Bruce Bostard. He's with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. On this Friday afternoon, back in just a couple minutes, we'll talk with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
It is the 21st day of December. I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. On the phone line, Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute. Hi, Jim. How are you today?
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, it's the winter solstice, and boy, it came in like it's winter, I suppose.
It sure did. You know, it's very rare that you see it come in right on the date, but it sure did this year. You know, you got about almost an inch of snow on the ground. I measured 0.9 inches this morning, it's starting to look and feel like winter out there. And so, yeah, I think it has finally arrived.
It finally arrived, but this would be normally about the time we sort of get much colder, although sometimes maybe a week and a half ago it would be a bit colder. It's been holding steady, and I guess November was really warm. The first part of December was really pretty warm. Will we even it out over the next few days?
Well, you know, we could. It's actually going to return to something close to what we normally expect for this time of year, with highs in the 30s and lows in the teens and 20s. So very typical for this time of year. Saturday should be very nice, high, sunny at 34, and somewhat cold Saturday night with a low of 24. And then Sunday it's supposed to be at 38 degrees. And then on Monday and Monday night and Tuesday, which would be Christmas Day, there is a chance of snow. So right now they aren't saying too much about the amounts or anything, but at least it's in the forecast. There's a large system passing just to the south of us Christmas Day, so we might see some snow out of that.
That was traveling last night. Hopefully it won't be snow in the form of last night. It was slick and nasty and hard to see outside.
It was, and very windy conditions. I saw a few trees down in town today, and so it was not a very pleasant experience to walk around in that last night. And
the next one will be better than that. The snow is just kind of a few flurries on Tuesday.
Yeah, it looks more like that. So it's kind of, and it, although unfortunately, again, it'll be a kind of rain snow mix because the temperatures will be hovering around the freezing mark probably when that falls. So, you know, it may not be much accumulation, but it may be kind of a repeat of icy conditions.
And so if you need to travel, it's going to be pretty easy to do that heading into Christmas. Christmas Day, it'll be all right. And then how about if you're headed out Wednesday and Thursday? What's that like?
Yeah, Wednesday and Thursday, there's still a chance of snow on those days and highs in the 20s and lows at night and around the 20-degree mark. So it's still be fairly winter-like weather, and if we get anything on Christmas Day, it might stick around for a little while at that point.
Well, you have a Merry Christmas. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And Jim Angel is at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon. Thanks for being with us. You have a great weekend, a very Merry Christmas. We do have a program for you on Monday, but of course I'm going to take the day off. Markets are open on Monday. They are open on Wednesday of next week, and they're open on January 2nd, and they're also open on January 31st. So just keep that in mind as you make your way through this holiday season. I'm Todd Gleason.